This is The Way Phase 4, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's discussion is on the currently streaming Marvel series for Disney Plus called What If? It's an anthology of animated stories told about alternate universes. What happens in the show is outside the canon timeline of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. These stories start out at a specific point that may look familiar to viewers who have seen the first three phases of Marvel storytelling. But then something happens. The sacred timeline branches off. And the story then told is something completely unlike what has happened in the MCU. Confused? We will do our best to explain.
What did you say?
Wow.
If you want to be part of the podcast, send us your thoughts through social media or email. This is the way phase 4 at gmail.com, at the way phase 4, or facebook.com/the way phase 4. If we get feedback, we will share it.
What did you expect?
Let me tell you a little bit more about the show. What If explores alternate realities. What if Yondu took T'Challa instead of Peter Quill, and T'Challa played the Star-Lord role? What if Peggy Carter got the superhero serum instead of Steve Rogers? What if Hank Pym went crazy and avenged his family losses by taking out the Avengers? In the movies, those are just hypotheticals. Here, storytellers get a chance to pull those threads. The narrator of this show is actually a character, Uatu, and it's Jeffrey Wright doing the voice work. I first became aware of him as Felix Leiter in the 2006 version of the Bond movie Casino Royale, and then some Bond movies after that. And then later he was Bernard in the HBO series Westworld. He's done plenty of work, and he's got a lot of voice acting as well. He can affect a gravelly, deep voice, and was asked to voice a version of Batman, in fact. And he'll actually play Jim Gordon in an upcoming movie called The Batman. Here, he's no Dark Knight, but the show definitely can get dark. And his character is a grim voyeur of not just one universe, but all realities. Not to interfere, but to tell the tale. The Watcher.
Follow me. And ponder the question. What if?
What if you've looked all over the multiverse for that next level holiday gift, and this is the year you want to make history? What if you're tired of just looking fine in your finery? What if you like Luke, but you love Loki? What if you head right now to cufflinks.com? Visit that site and you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, they are in the name, but you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and this fall, even bracelets. You have to check out their Marvel brand page. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Loki, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful offerings or wear something so subtle it will take a sharp eye for the person you want to impress to realize they're in the presence of the world's greatest hero accessories. You don't have to have a need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you might just find yourself considering a bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you see those Thanos Infinity Gauntlets or Captain America shields. There's more than Marvel. DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course, Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars-themed podcast, we can offer you the same site-wide discount code for 15% off your purchase when you enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. And look, some shows might not even tell you this, but in September, you can save even more if you spend more than $175 by the end of the month and use their 20% off code of Fresh Looks. What if you want to look marvelous while wearing Marvel? Well, cufflinks.com has you covered, no matter which universe you call home. Check out cufflinks.com today. All episodes appear to be directed by Brian Andrews. He seems to have come up through the ranks as a storyboard artist, but his credits do include things like the Star Wars, the Clone Wars TV series, and many of the Marvel movies that we know. The showrunner appears to be one of the writers, the one writing the pilot episode, apparently, A.C. Bradley. And the first story, it seems Marvel wanted us to see in the What If series, was an alternate universe centering on the first Avenger. In this case, it's not Captain America.
When asked to leave the room, Margaret Peggy Carter chose to stay. But soon it would be her venturing into the unknown.
The episode of What If streamed on August 11th, 2021, called What If Captain Carter Were the First Avenger? In the episode, we get to see Steve Rogers, the skinny version, as he's about to receive the Super Soldier Serum from Dr. Erskine. The Watcher explains that in this universe, instead of going to watch the procedure from the control room, Peggy Carter stays in the room, on the catwalk, and that's when the Hydra spy is infiltrating the experiment. He injures Steve in this version of the universe. Peggy kills the spy, and then takes Steve's place in the Erskine compartment there. She becomes the world's first super soldier instead of Steve Rogers. Now, I think this was chosen as the first What If because the events in the show kind of mirror the actual events of the Captain America movie closely enough that we, the audience, get a picture of how the show is going to demonstrate the multiverse through the divergences. Peggy, as Captain Carter, frees POWs, the members of the Howling Commandos, not Steve, you know, as in the Captain America the First Avenger movie. In this universe, he's hobbled, he's injured. But Peggy is still drawn to him because of his character. Peggy takes the Tesseract from Hydra, something Steve couldn't do. You know, he could only keep it from them at the very end of the movie. Now, it's clear from the way this is written, we're supposed to understand she's superior in every way to Steve. And in my opinion, there's a heavy-handed implication that she should have been the right choice for the serum all along. To me, it's not just a what if, it's this is the way it should have been. When Howard Stark experiments on the Tesseract, he's able to create the first Iron Man prototype. Now remember, this is using 1940s technology to do it, and this is Howard, not Tony Stark. Steve wears it like a suit, but it's more like Obadiah Stane's Ironmonger than Tony Stark's sleek suits. It's not subtle, though. We're told it's not what's on the outside that counts, but what's on the inside, and in this case, Steve Rogers is on the inside. When Peggy, the Howling Commandos, Bucky, and Steve go on a mission to try and end the World War once and for all, Rogers goes missing in action from a train, much like Bucky Barnes did. And there's even a line about Bucky's arm almost coming off. Carter, against orders, goes to save Steve from his Hydra imprisonment. But unlike Bucky, Steve wasn't ever given any serum during captivity with the Howling Commandos. That's what had allowed Bucky to survive the fall and, you know, when he lost his arm from the train fall in that Captain America movie. In this universe, Peggy's group interrupts a secret ritual that uses the Tesseract to summon an interdimensional creature said to be the inspiration for Hydra. Hilariously, the creature kills Red Skull almost instantly. Carter then fights the beast back with a sword taken from a castle wall decoration and the Captain America shield, which of course is not called that because it has the Union Jack on it, not a star encircled in stripes. With her Captain Britain shield and the sword and her super strength, Peggy forces the creature back into the portal but is taken with it as the portal closes. Around 70 years later, instead of Loki coming through a portal in the secret shield base beginning the first Avengers movie, it is Carter who emerges, victoriously having chopped off several tentacles of Shuma-Gorath, which is the monster. And that means this is a manner of time travel since she hasn't aged a day. There she meets Nick Fury, Clint Barton, and she finds out that at least the good guys won the war, but she most definitely missed her dance with Steve. This episode,
so a dame and a flying Buick, okay,
is not really good. It leans far too much into the women do it better PC culture that Disney likes to emphasize. It's one of their PC cultures that they love to bring out. Peggy doesn't seem to have any flaws or lapses in judgment. She's not human. Instead, it's the men around her oppressing her, just being inferior, or they're the ones having the evil impulses that cause all the issues. Now, I don't mind Steve being the one needing rescue, especially in his non-super serum state. It's fun to watch what, you know, might have happened, but they really don't do anything in the movies to prove that Peggy is perfect. Here, she's like Steve, except without what I guess they'd consider toxic male bravado, but she adds compassion that a toxic male would consider a weakness, I guess, in Disney's eyes. She also displays genius that somehow even rivals Howard's at one point. And, you know, don't think that the Hedy Lamarr reference was lost on me. It wasn't. I caught that. Now, those problems reveal why this show can't be taken seriously. On the pro side, the animation style is excellent. It is beautiful, and it is definitely the thing that makes this more than watchable. It draws you in. It's comic book pages coming to life. The story isn't good. The characters are much worse versions of themselves than in the movie. And I'd say maybe that's the point, except I'm not going to give them credit for that because of the culture war nonsense that Disney often seems to use. This episode shows both why this experiment is enjoyable, but can't ever be part of the live-action story. The animation style does draw you in. I'm not even a comic books fan. But it's never just one change that leads to everything being different. What If's premise is weak, because it's every decision coming after that first change. But for there to be a different choice, everything in everyone's life before that one choice would also have to be different. It's true, we could just be looking at one of an infinite amount of universes, but we're not. We're looking at the one the creators decided to tell, and they had to write it. If this was real, it would be worth entertaining the notions, except they created this, so every nuance is not just chance. This isn't just one fateful choice, but rather a cascade of decisions, branching off what Marvel calls the sacred timeline. If you think about that, then, since this show came after Loki, this is actually a story that never happened. Loki took place after the Battle of New York. That means TVA agents wiped this one out. Now, I'm sure they might have an alternate explanation, but, well, this is just episode one.
I'm still that skinny kid from Brooklyn. Now just in a big metal suit.
You're more than the suit. The suit is nothing without the man inside. You're my hero, Steve. I mean, you're a hero.
Episode two somehow gets worse. What if T'Challa became a Star-Lord is credited to Matthew Chauncey, streaming for the first time on August 18th, 2021.
In a multiverse of infinite possibility, is your destiny determined by your nature? Or by the nature of your world?
We start in 1988 with Yondu and the Ravagers being sent to Earth by Ego to retrieve Peter Quill. Let's do ourselves a favor and try and forget this too never happened because TV agents would have taken care of it. Instead of picking up Quill, the Ravagers find T'Challa, pre-Black Panther, of course, and then immediately we see that Peter Quill was a screw-up, but T'Challa, nature over nurture, is honorable, intelligent, suave, a universal celebrity, even as a teenager, I guess. I would imagine, because I am a white male, it would seem more like virtue signaling to someone like me than just about anyone other than a white male, but look, this is not as if this is subtle. This show actually implies that T'Challa could have talked down Thanos from his genocidal edge.
I'm a big enough man to admit when I'm wrong. T'Challa here showed me there was more than one way to reallocate the universe's resources.
Sometimes the best weapon in your arsenal is just a good argument.
Aye, aye, Commander.
Not only is the object of the heist that goes on in this show something that wipes out galactic hunger, but the act of stealing it is implied to somehow be more noble because T'Challa is doing it, not because keeping that from, you know, the universe somehow is more important. The collector in this episode is the big bad, and the slave girl that he has commits suicide to destroy his lab in the movies. Well, she saves the day here because of a bon mot from T'Challa.
I liked that thing you said about not locking people in cages.
Thank you. I am forever in your debt.
He finds out that Wakandan technology is able to space travel far beyond what would have been capable in the normal timeline, even for all of the genius said to be housed in Wakanda that's set up in the movies. on the ship that he finds, and that's how he discovers that he's of noble birth and everything, he ends up getting wrapped up in a feel-good sort of story there where he finds out his father really did miss him and everything. Well, apparently on Earth, it was impossible for Peter Quill to be anything other than a mop boy at a Dairy Queen, because we're supposed to gasp when Ego comes to get his boy finally after all these years.
Sorry, we're closed.
What, Peter? Can't spare a little time for dear old dad?
Too bad, this might spell the end of the world.
Yeah, somehow this episode is even worse. And I don't know what we're supposed to be thinking about these characters. So far, we're shown Peggy Carter was oppressed by men, and Peter Quill, despite being by nature half celestial, he would have ultimately been a nobody because of a lack of nurture. Then you contrast that. T'Challa, a child raised by thieves, but by virtue of his youthful optimism and time-limited exposure to Wakanda's educational prowess, he's going to overcome all obstacles, not even with his knowledge, but just by inspiration. His nature is able to defy and overcome nurture from the Ravagers.
Baba warned that was all humans know. Turns out he was right.
You lost your home, and now you save everyone else's. That's the name of this tune, huh?
Both episode 1 and 2 can entertain you. You're allowed to be. It's not my place to tell you that you can't like them. But I'm not doing that just because I'm critical. I like Nebula as a character. I just didn't think... I didn't think any of it worked. I think this is a terrible episode. Both are terrible stories. Perhaps worse to me, they don't even exist, because the TVA would have done the trimming on these branches. And that leaves me to wonder why they expect us to watch what is either a story they say could have been, or really it feels like Disney is saying this is what should have been. And none of these shows add anything to the lore, as far as I'm concerned.
I beg your pardon?
Now listen, of the first three, episode 3 to me was the best by far. It leans more into a tipping rather than a toppling of the expectations, but it still suffers from that TVA trimming problem. And yes, while the TVA exists outside of the timeline, these are not all events being caused by a variant Loki. Sylvie did travel through time specifically to avoid capture, but the sacred timelines were supposed to be running parallel. These events would have been caught and disposed of along the way, because the outcome does affect whether Kang would end up where he was when he was. That's going to be the last time I should have to discuss it, though. We can make these arguments about all of the What If episodes released so far, but further, I'm just going to let it go because they happened after the Battle of New York, and it still wouldn't mean that they wouldn't have been trimmed, or coming before Loki still wouldn't mean that Marvel couldn't explain it away. That all they need is like two lines of canon dialogue in an upcoming movie or something, and then they can explain it away. They really do have control of that situation. And I really don't want to take up any more time with that argument. But those first two episodes were terrible. Especially when you compare it to episode 3, which isn't that much better. But better is still better. What if the world lost its mightiest heroes is what we get, I suppose, when the first two writers team up, Bradley and Chauncey. Episode 3 streamed for the first time on August 25th, 2021, and we pick up the story with S.H.I.E.L.D. director Nick Fury and Natasha Romanoff as they're attempting to recruit the Avengers, starting with Tony Stark around the time of Iron Man 2. It turns out the recruits are getting assassinated in this timeline. Stark, by a tampered needle during an injection that was applied by Romanoff, remember, in the donut shop. It was sabotaged, though, by our villain. Clint Barton is made to fire an arrow by our villain that kills Thor as the Thunder God was reaching to collect Mjolnir on Earth during that first Thor movie. And then Barton dies in S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. Bruce Banner explodes during investigations into the murders when he can't stop growing in size as the Hulk during a transformation. And then the Black Widow is killed while contacting Fury to tell him that the murders have to do with Hope. Now, honestly, I'm shocked the writers didn't lean into Black Widow taking over for Fury. I wonder if they were a little tempted to do so, but didn't for a certain reason. Asgard invades Earth now that Thor is murdered on Midgard, meaning Loki is the sole crown prince as the remaining son of Odin. Fury finally figures out that Hank Pym has gone mad with revenge over the deaths of his wife and daughter during S.H.I.E.L.D. missions. Loki tricked Pym, takes him to Asgardian custody, and Loki and the Asgardian army take over Earth, mostly peacefully through a show of force at the United Nations. Fury, though, wonders if he's made a deal with the devil, starts assembling more heroes, including a frozen Steve Rogers and a summoned Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers.
Either make a pact with a god or deal with the devil.
This episode, ironically, there shows us that even in the What If multiverse, Captain Carter is a rare divergence. There's no mention of Wakanda after the takeover of Earth by Asgard. Who knows how many heroes are really going to stand up to Loki, or if at this point, maybe it's not really even an option to take back control. No Tony or Banner being the geniuses, and having almost no way to galvanize the team as they did during that first Avengers movie, it really feels like this one leaves you a little bit less full of hope. The Wakanda solution is actually one that's saved for episode 6. Still, this was the first episode to feel less like a culture lesson that we needed to learn, and more like a cautionary tale, and this episode felt more like what I expected from the first two episodes than what we ended up getting.
What? What'd you say?
Those are the episodes that make up the first third of the Marvel What If series on Disney+. 6 more episodes to go, and as of the airing of this podcast episode, 3 more are ready for you to view. You may have heard a little something earlier in the podcast, but now it seems like a great time to tell you more about our partnership with Cufflinks.com. If you didn't know, we have another podcast too. Our Star Wars-centered podcast is called This Is the Way. This podcast was my way of separating Marvel and Star Wars, not because people aren't big fans of both, but because it would let people celebrate both who liked both, but they could stay away from one or the other if they only celebrated one of those fandoms. Now, last year, Cufflinks.com reached out to our Star Wars show and provided us with merchandise to review and a coupon code. That code is not only back for our Star Wars listeners at This Is The Way, but also for you here on our Phase 4 podcast. The code is THEWAY15, and that gets you 15% off everything in your cart, everything, site-wide. Now, in September, if you spend $175 or more, you can save even more by using the code found on their website, Fresh Looks. No matter which code you use, you're going to find finely crafted accessories, but they're offering more to us than just the coupon code. A chance to win some merchandise in a giveaway for our listeners here, just as on the Star Wars podcast. Now, if we reach a minimum number of entries, I will select a valid one of those and announce that selection in an October episode of this podcast and send that listener an item. You can enter both the Star Wars and this Marvel giveaway, and randomly, you could potentially win both. It's possible for you to get an item for the Cufflinks.com catalog of more than 3,000 products from all sorts of brands, including Marvel-themed accessories. Now, there is a catch. To avoid any chance that there are legal issues, I have to limit this giveaway in October to U.S. residents and addresses only. Here is how you enter for this, our first This Is The Way Phase 4 giveaway. You need to follow our Twitter account. Yes, you need a Twitter account of your own, and you have to follow us. But if you are already, you're done with that step. Go to our Twitter account, reply to the pinned tweet there, and include the 3 specific hashtags. Don't worry, you can copy and paste those right from that tweet. It's This Is The Way Phase 4, Cufflinks.com, and The Way 15. I will show you how to do that in a response of my own, but I think you can figure that out. But you're not done, okay? You have one more step to enter so that I can verify you. In order to have an official entry in the giveaway, I need to make sure that you're eligible. To do that, you have to email us. I want you to provide me the link to your reply to our tweet. Not a link to our tweet. I know how to find that. But please find the link to your tweet after you've replied by going to the share button there. Email that link to your reply to us along with your name and a mailing address in case your entry is chosen. After the entry is chosen, I'll check the email, check the Twitter account to see that it's a follower, check to see that the address is in one of the 50 United States, and yes, it can be a P.O. box. I will check to make sure the Twitter account is not a bot set up to enter contests. I don't just want imaginary followers here. I will verify the follow, the tweet reply that's containing the hashtags, and the email with your address. Now, if you wouldn't mind putting October giveaway as the subject line of that email, that's going to make it nice and easy for me, but that's not a required part of the entry. That's just to make it easy on myself. Our email address is thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. Cufflinks.com is an exclusive, officially licensed provider of cufflinks for these brands, but they offer so much more, like ties, tie bars, socks, lapel pins, and more. And you probably heard a little bit about that earlier in our show. Help me thank them for partnering with This Is The Way Phase 4 and help grow our follower list at the same time.
These are my stories. I observe all that transpires here, but I do not, cannot, will not interfere. For I am the Watcher.
Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Twitter at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. There are more episodes to air, and we will break those down for you in our next podcast episode. The next live-action show to air on Disney Plus will be Hawkeye, and based on the trailer, it looks like a great handoff for the character of Hawkeye, but also an enjoyable show set in a holiday time period, sort of like a Marvel Die Hard. Hawkeye hits the streaming service on November 24th. In theaters so far, we've had Black Widow and Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. The Eternals comes out on November 5th, and Spider-Man No Way Home spins into theaters December 17th. This has been This Is The Way Phase 4's discussion of episodes 1 through 3 of What If? I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.